Good evening. Greet each one in Christ's precious name. Good to be with you at Keysville. You know, you hear these names and can't envision it until you get here. It's good to be here. Nice drive here tonight. You know, when Brother Glendon called me last year sometime, I think it might have been October, and we set this date, and it's amazing. Life keeps moving right on. Here we are, August. So it's good to be with you. When I started studying, I wondered why I said I'd take this subject. But anyway, it was good for me to study into this. And I hope that I can stir your thinking, and I hope I didn't totally miss the mark here, what you're looking for, but I want to look at the message title. I think it's already given, Financial Accountability. You can turn to Matthew 25. I'm going to read one of the parables there. Just a little introduction to the message. We all know what financial is. Back to our title, accountability. Let me give you the definition of accountability. I like that. It said an obligation or willingness to accept responsibility or to account for one's actions. That's what we're talking about. You know, our subject this evening is about accepting responsibility and answering for the way I spend and save my money. And I think we all know this is a sensitive topic. Most of us feel our money matters are pretty private. It's not something that everyone has to know about. And I don't feel it's a good idea for all of us to go around and say how much we earn a year. I think that could cause an inferior or a superior attitude and make those who make less struggle with jealousy. You know, when we get to comparing ourselves among ourselves, that stirs up trouble, it does. Well, this evening, you know, I feel like I can talk pretty freely here this evening because I don't know any of you real well. You know, I don't know what your house looks like. I don't know how big your business is or your farm that you have or how many properties you own. I don't know all that. So I think I can feel pretty free. You know, I don't even know what most of you drive, your vehicles. I'm a mechanic, and so I work in vehicles. And I know vehicles can be a big status thing to a lot of people. But I can assume that since you live in the USA and have a job, or your husband and father has one, that you are among the rich in this world. We want to get that straight before we start here. You know, wealth is determined by your net worth, which includes various assets such as property, investments, and savings, while deducting debt that you have. And I like numbers. Just give you a few just to get you thinking and to show you where we really are at as far as all of us are rich this evening. We are. Globally, if you have a net worth of at least $4,100, that will place you in the wealthiest half of the world's population. It's amazing. If you have a net worth of $95,000, that will place you in the top 10% of the world's wealthiest. Well, here in the USA, I mean, we are USA is a rich country. Here in the USA, when we compare ourselves to our neighbors, you know what that does? We can feel like we aren't very rich, but we are. There are plenty of people we can find with more money than we have. And that's, we tend to compare ourselves with them. But just think about globally, and all of a sudden, we are the rich. In the USA, to be classed among the rich, your net worth needs to be between $2.5 to $3 million. Now, those are the people that we look at and say they're rich. But 60% of Americans have net worth of $100,000 or more. And in 2022, that was the latest figure I could find on this. In 2022, the middle class in USA earned between $59,000 to $98,000 a year. So I'll assume that most of you fall into the middle class in the USA. But don't forget that the USA is the richest country in the world. So even the middle class in the USA are among the rich people in the world. You know, we become so accustomed to our luxuries and can forget that many do not even enjoy the same lifestyle we do. You know, we think this is normal, but worldwide it's not. So it does us good to consider what a lot of the world lives like. Just another figure here. 10% of the world is malnourished. And worldwide, one in four are food insecure. I mean, what that means is they don't know where the next meal is coming from. It's hard for me to wrap my head around that. You know, we just don't worry about those things. We are rich people. We are. And Gary Miller's books, I don't know if you ever read them or not, books on Global Village give us a lot to think about. And we don't have time to get into that. But if you get the chance, look through those books. And it'll help you get a picture of how wealthy you and I are. Let's read Matthew 25. We're going to read the parable of the talents. That starts at verse 14, and we're going to read to verse 30. Matthew 25, verse 14. For the kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country, who called his own servants and delivered unto them his goods. And unto one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, to every man according to his several ability, and straightway took his journey. Then he that had received the 5 talents went and traded with the same, and made them other 5 talents. And likewise, he that had received 2, he also gained other 2. But he that had received 1 went and digged in the earth and hid his Lord's money. After a long time, the Lord of those servants cometh and reckoneth with them. And so he that received 5 talents came and brought other 5 talents, saying, Lord, thou hast delivered unto me 5 talents. Behold, I have gained beside them 5 talents more. His Lord said unto him, Well done, thou good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord. He also that had received 2 talents came and said, Lord, thou deliverest unto me 2 talents. Behold, I have gained 2 other talents beside them. His Lord said unto him, Well done, good and faithful servant. Thou hast been faithful over a few things. I will make thee ruler over many things. Enter thou into the joy of thy Lord. Then he which had received the 1 talent came and said, Lord, I knew thee that thou art an hard man, reaping where thou hast not sown, and gathering where thou hast not strawed. And I was afraid, and went, and hid thy talent in the earth. Lo, there thou hast that is thine. His Lord answered and said unto him, Thou wicked and slothful servant, thou knowest that I reap where I sowed not, and gather where I have not strawed. Thou oughtest therefore to have put my money to the exchangers, and then at my coming I should have received mine own with usury. Take therefore the talent from him, and give it unto him which hath 10 talents. For every one that hath shall be, for unto every one that hath shall be given, and he that shall have abundance. But from him that hath not shall be taken away even that which he hath. And cast ye the unprofitable servant into outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. You know, we are like the servants of this account. Our master is away, but he will be returning someday. And he has given some of his goods while he's gone, to take care of. This evening, I have 6 points that we want to look at. Point number one is recognize God's ownership. I'll repeat that. Recognize God's ownership. You know, the reason that you and I are accountable is because I am not the owner of my possessions. God is. And that's hard for most of us to wrap our heads around. It's our things. Just a couple verses. Psalms 24, verse 1 says, The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the world and they that dwell therein. Psalms 89, 11, The heavens are thine, the earth also is thine. As for the world and the fullness thereof, thou hast founded them. There's many other verses. You know, this is the number one foundational point that we need to get riveted in our mind, and that is recognize God's ownership. You know, if we don't get this one right, we won't get anything else right. You know, it's like starting wrong when buttoning your shirt. You know, if you don't start out right, none of the rest of the buttons will line up right. Just think about everything that you have. Everything is a gift. Today's a gift. Every breath you take is a gift. You know, none of us have what it takes to take that next breath. We don't. It's a gift from God. You know, your health and strength, sound mind, all are gifts from God. You know, your food, clothing, shelter, you can go down the list. It's gifts, gifts from God. Our brother talked about in his devotions, we've been given the gift of salvation. We are a blessed people. Everything that you and I have have been given to us by God. Well, our subject this evening is about our finances. You know, if we can get a hold of the fact that they're God's, it'll help us work through our thoughts and feelings. I just wrote down a few of our thoughts and feelings. I wrote 3 of them down. You know, when we realize that our things are God's, number one, that will strip us of our pride about our things. You know, it is so easy to become proud of our things and our accomplishments in life. It is. It's normal. But like we already talked about, you know, who gives you your next breath? Who gave you the gift of today? Who gave you your health and strength and a sound mind? Who gave you a job that you can go make a living and you can just keep going with that? You know, you see it isn't just our good business management and all our hard work that blessed us with all these things. We need to think about that. so easy to just think that we got it together. We're making it happen. Everything we have is a gift from God. You know, we really, when you just stop and think about it, we are really so small and helpless. We are. The second one, when we realize that our things are God's, number two, it will help us accept the losses that we will experience as we go through life. Losses will happen. And it is so easy to become bitter when our things are taken from us. After all, didn't we work so hard for them? Well, the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. You know, we have a sovereign God. And he has the right to give or take whose things? His things from us. Number three, when we realize that our things are God, number three, it should help us to accept our lot in life. You know, it's easy to look at, maybe it's a good friend, maybe someone you go to church with. Put in there whoever. You know, maybe it looks like everything they try just turns to gold. You know, that his business ventures go well and makes a lot of money. Well, you know, if you're struggling along, it's easy to wonder why you couldn't be blessed like he is. Probably all had some of those thoughts already. You know, maybe you wonder why you couldn't have been born into a rich family. You know, a family where they can buy what their hearts desires. Wouldn't that be nice? Well, remember our point. When we realize our things are God, it should help us to accept our lot in life. You know, back to the parable of the three servants that we just read, that the master gave them talents. One was given 10 talents. Five. On down. You know the story. We just read it. You know, God will entrust each one of us with different talents and gifts. And each of us will be required to give an account of how we use them. Point number two, we are stewards of his things. I'll repeat that. We are stewards of his things. You know, back to the parable that we just read, the King James Version calls these men servants, but I think we can also refer to them as stewards. What is a steward? A steward is one who manages or looks after another's property. You know, these men were to care for their master's goods while he was gone. Well, God has given you and I things, many things that we're to care for and use until his return. We all are stewards. We've already talked about God is he's the owner of everything we have, and we are his stewards. You know, as Christians, we take our stewardship responsibility seriously. You know, the stewardship responsibility extends beyond financial management. You know, it encompasses a broader mandate to care for the earth and its resources. You know, we're caretakers of all of God's creation. And we believe that God will hold us accountable for the things he has given us. His creation. Our money, our time, our bodies, our Christian heritage, etc. You can keep going with that list. As I thought about that, you know, I had asked myself the question, do I always remember and act that way? Does the knowledge always direct my choices? You know, just remember, a steward has to answer to his master. I wrote down three things that we will try to do as we are stewards of his things. Number one, a good steward seeks to please his master. You know, if I'm to manage or be a steward of someone's business or their property, I'm going to do my best to manage and take care of it like the owner wants it done. So as we go through life, you and I need to be led by the Spirit. We need to ask the question, what would God want me to do in this situation? You know, do you and I seek God's will in the financial decisions that we make? You know, that's why we need to, it's a good custom to pray about things before we make big decisions. Because remember, they are God's things. Number two, a good steward seeks to know his master's desire. You know, the closer we are to God, the clearer it will become as how he wants us to care for and use his things. Do you know what the master loves and what he hates? He has it spelled out pretty clear in his word. That's why we need to read our Bibles and pray. We need to have a close relationship with him. And number three, a good steward seeks to spend his master's money wisely. As I thought about that, if you had an answer to God at the end of the day for the purchases you made today, would you be comfortable with it? Something to think about. Was the purchase justifiable? We're stewards of his things. Point number three, learn to be content with the amount God has chosen to give you. I'll repeat that. Learn to be content with the amount God has chosen to give you. Just a definition of contentment. I think we all know what it is, but a state of happiness and satisfaction. You know, we do not read, back to the parable we read, we don't read that any of these servants were unhappy with the amount they received. You know, the first two went out and got busy trading their talents. The man with only one talent was responsible to use the little he had. You know, contentment is a state of inner peace and satisfaction, not dependent on external circumstances, but it's rooted in trust and reliance on God. You know, contentment is having a settled spirit that trusts God's goodness, trusts his sovereignty. And contentment is not something that you and I were born with. We weren't. Be nice if we would, but if we would have been, but it is not. Contentment is not something that I decide one time and now I have it for the rest of my life. We will need to learn how to be content, and we will have to work at it daily. There are so many things that we see or hear about that can just easily rob our contentment. We can be a content person until all of a sudden we see something that we would really like or that we really need. All of a sudden we're not content anymore. How many times have you been content, you know, until you seen or heard about something you thought would be nice? Philippians 4:11 says, not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. You know, Paul, according to that, Paul wasn't born a content person. He had to learn how to be content. You know, it's a learned virtue that involves accepting God's provision, both in times of plenty and need, and finding joy in his presence. Both contentment and greed are heart conditions. You know, the opposite of contentment is greed. And all of us were born with that sinful, carnal nature. And greed and wanting more are going to be the natural response. They're going to be natural responses. Being satisfied with our lot in life are responses that only come if we let God do a work in our hearts. Well, the last part of the message, we're gonna talk about accountability. That's our title. I already gave the definition of accountability. I give it to you again. An obligation or willingness to accept responsibility or to account for one's action. You know, accountability is a word that we don't really care for. We want to make our own decisions and run our own life. You know, think about our previous points. If we get them right, only then will this thought of accountability make sense. So who are we accountable to? Well, point number four is we are accountable to God. I'll repeat that. We are accountable to God. The truth is, whether you like it or not, you and I will stand before an all-knowing God and give an account of our deeds and actions. We will. And he knows our thoughts. He knows our motives, why we did what we did. And that's for every area of our life. And this evening, our subject is our finances. So that's what we're going to be talking about. You know, I wrestle with this subject about our finances. And I hope you do too. Because we need to. We already discussed, we're among the rich. Matthew 19:23 reads like this, 23 and 24. Then said Jesus unto his disciple, verily I say unto you, that a rich man shall hardly enter into the kingdom of heaven. And again I say unto you, it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter into the kingdom of God. Some pretty strong verses. You know, Jesus implies in these verses that riches can easily keep someone out of heaven. In fact, I would take these verses that the richer someone is, the harder it will be for them to get to heaven. And that thought scares me a little. You know, sometimes I wonder why we strive so hard for riches. We need money. It takes a lot just to live. You with families. Can't get enough. Let's turn to Luke 16. I want to read. It's a very familiar passage. I want to read an account of a rich man Jesus told us about. And I'm going to read verses, Luke 16. I'm going to read verses 19 to 31. Verse 19. There was a certain rich man, which was clothed in purple and fine linen, and fared sumptuously every day. And there was a certain beggar named Lazarus, which was laid at his gate, full of sores, and desiring to be fed with the crumbs which fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, the dogs came and licked his sores. And it came to pass that the beggar died and was carried by the angels into Abraham's bosom. The rich man also died and was buried. And in hell he lift up his eyes, being in torments, and seeing Abraham afar off and Lazarus in his bosom. And he cried and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am tormented in this flame. But Abraham said, Son, remember that thou in thy lifetime received thy good things, and likewise Lazarus evil things. But now he is comforted, and thou art tormented. And beside all this, between us and you there is a great gulf fixed, so that they which would pass from hence to you cannot neither would pass from hence to you cannot, neither can they pass to us that would come from thence. Then he said, I pray thee therefore, Father, that thou wouldest send him to my father's house, for I have five brethren, that he may testify unto them, lest they also come into this place of torment. Abraham saith unto him, They have Moses and the prophets. Let them hear them. And he said, Nay, Father Abraham, but if one went unto them from the dead, they will repent. And he said unto them, If they hear not Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded, though one rose from the dead. There's a lot we could say about this passage, just a few things here. The rich man was not cast into hell because he was rich. Lazarus was not taken to heaven because he was poor. It's not the thing of whether we're rich or poor, whether we're going to go to heaven, whether we're going to go to hell. You know, the serious question we need to consider is, why was the rich man cast into hell? I know we don't have all the details of his life in that, but you know, the Bible doesn't list a list of wicked sins that he was involved in. And maybe he was, but it doesn't list it. You know, I tend to believe that he was cast into hell more for the sins of omission than the sins of commission. You know, he lived for self. He had no compassion. He neglected those in need around him. And I had to ask myself, am I guilty of the same? Something we need to think about. Who are the Lazaruses today that I may be ignoring? I want to read three paragraphs out of the book, Where is Lazarus? By Gary Miller. I'm just going to read it. He could say it better than I could say it. I'm going to read what he had to say. Jesus provided a very graphic description. He was talking about this passage. By any measure, Lazarus was extremely poor. But how does this apply to life in North America? I have never walked out my front door and found a beggar covered with sores. If I did, I would call 911, connect him to medical care, sign him up for social services, and consider the problem solved. So how can North Americans apply this teaching? And who are the Lazaruses in our day? Let's begin by defining terms. There are many definitions, but poverty always refers to some kind of lack. It might be a lack of food, knowledge, health care, or good housing. When Jesus said, "For ye have the poor with you always," he was simply acknowledging that in our broken world, there would always be those who lack. In the account of the rich man and Lazarus, there were at least five important things that Lazarus lacked: food, medical help, friendship, physical mobility, and we assume good clothing. Each of these is a legitimate human need. So when we see all these needs converge on one person, we would classify him as extremely poor. So, who are the Lazaruses today? For those of us living comfortable, middle-class American lives, Lazarus isn't as visible as he was for the rich man. We tend to associate with people of similar background, income, and ethnicity. In the middle of our busy social schedules and crowded calendars, we might think times have changed and Lazarus has moved on. But make no mistake, there are still millions of Lazaruses in our world. No matter where you live in this broken world, there is a Lazarus close by. End of quote. Something to think about. I thought he did a good job of writing that out. It's something that you and I need to think about. Point number five is God requires us to share our blessings. I'll repeat that. God requires us to share our blessings. Galatians 6:10, as we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto them who are of the household of faith. You know, that includes my church family, my brothers and sisters in the Lord. Give willingly and regularly. You know, in the Old Testament, God required his people to give 10%. In the New Testament, it's not spelled out what percentage we are to give. But out of us rich Americans, I really believe God is expecting us to give more than 10%. Remember, when we're given, whose money is it? It's not ours, it's God's. You know, our giving needs to be governed by love. I came across a quote. You cannot give without loving, but you... Wait, let me start over. You can give without loving, but you cannot love without giving. If you really love, giving will come. You know, God has been so good to us. You know, we have so many opportunities that we can help support and run. And we could have quite a list, but I just listed just some of our normal Sunday morning offerings. You know, local brotherhood sharing, the church-wide need, you know, school tuition, our church and Sunday school fund, mission, youth Bible school. The list can go on and on. So many things that we can help with. You know, our church-run programs should be our first obligation when giving. It should be. You know, these things won't keep running unless you and I support them. And what I'm going to say next is no reflection on someone that is not financially able to contribute or pay their share. But this is for those of us that are able to contribute. You know, we all go through different seasons of life. You know, you may be going through some hard times, or you're in the heat of the battle and you can't make enough money to reach around. Maybe for a period of time, you may not be able to help with the mission projects, etc., just so you can pay your school tuition, because your children are your number one mission field. So we need to make that happen. You know, just a few words to the youth. You know, when should you start giving? You know, some of the youth today make a lot of money compared to back when I was young. You know, if you end up in the hospital with appendicitis or something like that. I mean, youth, I know they got all kinds of energy and it's all good, but if you end up in there, or you cause an accident that totaled the other person's vehicle, who are you going to look to for help? Well, are you contributing to your local brotherhood sharing and the quarterly church-wide need offerings? I know you don't have a lot of youth here, but you know, just if you had commercial vehicle insurance, if you're young and you own a fairly new vehicle, you would pay $3,500 to $6,000 for insurance every year. And if you have an accident or get a couple speeding tickets, it only goes up from there. I know this is a good many years ago, but I know of a young man whose dad told him he doesn't have to give until he's married, that he should save his money so he can buy a house. Do you know how messed up that thinking is? There will never be a convenient time to become a good giver. You know, you get married and then you buy a house and you have house payments and you have children and then you have school tuition and then you got to replace your vehicles and etc. Your expenses keep coming. You know, the time to give is now, when you're young. And parents, we need to teach our children how to give. It's our responsibility. Let me just give you a little bit, Just a little story here. My brother used to mow for a neighbor, mow the neighbor's yard. This goes back a good many years, but he didn't get paid very much to mow, and I think it was 25 cents a time. And my parents said he was supposed to keep all the money. We'll look at it at the end of the summer. Keep it at a certain place and write it down. Write it on the calendar and keep track of it. Well, he made $12.50 for the summer. And he had a pull out. My dad always said 10%. Now you could think $12.50. That was a lot of sweat and a lot of hard work. But anyway, my dad said, $12.50. 10% goes to the offering. And then my dad got half of what was left. But just forget the story or who it was. But you see what my parents had done. They had laid a foundation for giving. And growing up, we always had to give 10% of any money we earned to the Lord. You know, so my dad always said it. It isn't yours. It's the Lord's. Parents, that's what you need to teach. You know, giving needs to become a lifestyle. You know, I watched people bulldoze ahead financially, but rob God. You don't want to meet God like that. You know, if we have our first few points as our foundation, it'll help us be a good giver. You know, it's God's. Some of those, What shall we give? Our church programs, like I already said, should be our first obligation. And there's many other good organizations to give to also, Christian Aid Ministries, things like that. There's many organizations out there just looking for your money. But one caution, know where your money's going and how much of it will actually get used for what you gave it for. There are some organizations that if you check into it, they eat up 75 to 90% just to run the program. We can do a lot. Let's be good stewards of his money and give it to those who will use it to build God's kingdom and bless people. You know, God brings a lot of people into our lives. And I'll be honest, it's hard to know what to do with all that. You know, God cares about these people. You know, and a question to let you with is, are we taking care of the Lazaruses? You know, the rich man went to hell because of his responses. And we need to get it right. God gave us someone to help get it right. And that's our brethren and sisters. And that brings us to the next point. Point number 6. We need to be accountable to our brethren. I'll repeat that. We need to be accountable to our brethren. I wrote down a couple examples just to get you thinking. There are some church groups that are very accountable to each other. You would not be allowed to do a business venture, buy a property or a vehicle without getting the Brotherhood's consent. And I'm not here to fault them for that. We don't do it that way, but don't criticize those that do. Because they realize their accountability to God and are willing to open their lives and to the Brotherhood and help them get it right. But I knew of a young married man that went to one of those churches, and he said, there is no way that someone is going to look over my finances and tell me that I can't buy a brand new pickup, because he wanted to buy a brand new pickup. So he left that church because he wanted to buy a new pickup. He didn't want that accountability. Let me give you another one. There's a local business that we have done business with on and off over the past 20 years. And the owner is part of the Plain community. I'll just say that. I don't want to say what denomination. He's part of the Plain community. And his business ethics are not good. Many years ago, he got sued from one of his customers. He claimed bankruptcy, walked away from that, and started a company under a different name. Over the past years, he has bought quite a few properties, which was okay as long as he could keep the big ball rolling. He's on COD everywhere because he owes everyone and doesn't pay his bills. He owes us a good bit of money. And I don't know how many times I've been lied to. Talk to him and what can we do, you know, can you? And he'll say, yeah, I'll talk to my secretary and I'll have you a check in 3 days. One lie after another. You just figure they're lies and you're just fortunate if you eventually get a check. But I just had a conversation last week with one of his workers. We do some work for him. And he said the sheriff put a sheriff sign on the building. But the owner took it down because all his properties are under another name. And he's just leasing this building to his company. So no one will be able to touch the building. The workers are to have medical and dental insurance. That's the agreement. And two of them recently went to the dentist, another one medical, and both of them, they put their cards out and they were told they have no coverage, but they're still taking it out off their paycheck each week. They have quite a few vehicles. It was a fleet, and a good many were leased. And they were not getting paid, so the other week, someone rolled in and repossessed three trucks. In the next few days, he went out and bought a couple other vehicles. You know, life goes on. This worker was really upset, using a lot of heavy language, and this man's not a believer. He don't even go to church. And he said, I may not be part of the Plain community. He called him what he is. He's part of the Plain community. I may not be this, but I pay my bills. I said, that's good. That's how it should be. He said, my boss goes to church on Sunday, but the other 6 days of the week, he rips everyone off. He said, referring to his boss, he's not even a Christian. Now just think through that. You know, that is a sad story. Why did I tell you this story? Not to make someone look bad, but to learn some lessons from that. Does God care how we use our finances? He sure does. He cares. You know, this Plain community man has been a horrible testimony for years and years. It's his lifestyle. It's one thing to get into hard times and work through that, but it's his lifestyle. Just a couple thoughts. Remember, if you borrow money, you are a servant to the lender. You are. And if you're unable to pay your bills, it is your responsibility to talk to your lender. It is your responsibility. And if you're having difficulty in your business, please reach out, ask for help, and accept advice. The advice that you're given. And as I thought about that, I've been on probably four committees already through the years, and they weren't all from our church. to help with people that had financial problems. And as I thought about that, every one of them, all four of them, are gone. They left the church, go somewhere else. You know, their lives are out of control. Financially is a wreck. But you know what? They still got it right and still don't want to accept advice. Let's sit up and listen, because God cares. He cares how, whether we pay our bills, whether we need, if you need help, there is help available. There is. Just open your life to Him. Just be accountable to your brethren, because someday you will meet God and will give an account of your life to Him. That's how serious it is. I know it's time to close. One more. I want you to think through a scenario with me. Okay. I like to hunt. And suppose I would like to hunt the ultimate big game trophy in North America, which is the Alaskan doll sheep. Well, I'm 60. So if I'm going to go in this hunt, I need to make it happen soon, because it's a lot of rough terrain, a lot of hiking. You have to walk 10 to 20 miles a day. And I think that since I've worked so hard all my life, I deserve a few weeks off. You know, God has been so good and blessed me financially, and I can afford it. So I'm going. I know it's a lot of money, but I've given a lot to the work of the Lord. Do you see that mind process that's happening? And some of them things may be true. Well, I'll tell you right up front, I don't have money to go on a doll sheep hunt. If I had the money, I hope I would not do that. Let me tell you what an Alaskan doll sheep hunt costs. A pretty good hunt with a 75% success rate is $22,525 plus a trophy fee and paying to fly you in and out of camp, tips, and my flight to Alaska. And if I bag, well, then I want to mount it. So that could end up costing me between $35,000 to $55,000. Would you all be good with that? If I go on my dream hunt, if I can afford it. I hope you all have a problem with that. You know, if you and I are going to make our decisions by whether or not we can afford it, we're not going to come out right. We're not. You know, the question is, what was our point? We're accountable to our brethren. The question is, will I be willing to listen to my brothers? I'm not at my home church here. But I hope if someone's going to do that, that we'd have a lot of brothers standing up and saying, wait a minute. Weigh things in the balance. Think about that. So I could spend $35,000 to $55,000. What does God think of that? When we're in the rich, remember that? What percent of the people don't have enough to eat tomorrow? How many Bibles could I send and save souls and feed people? But my selfish heart needs to go in this hunt. Think about that. You know, the question is, would I be willing to listen to my brothers? You know, the human heart is so selfish. And we can explain why we should be doing this. And here's the thing. I can easily see when someone else is doing something that is extravagant or that's in excess, but I can be blinded to what I'm doing. That is why we need our brothers and sisters and need to be open to their advice. Let's work at it together because we need to get it right. We do. We read that story. The rich man went to hell. He didn't get it right. He ended up in hell. You know, Cain asked, "Am I my brother's keeper?" Well, the answer is yes. You are your brother's keeper. You know, we already read the verses. Jesus' own words, "It is hard for a rich man to enter into heaven." Well, that's you and me. We're among the rich. It is hard for us to enter heaven. That's why. I need you to remind me when I'm making poor choices. And you may need to be reminded too. Well, tonight, I'm not trying to play God in your life. I know I've said a lot of things. I hope I have stirred your thinking. And I want each one of you to let the Spirit work in your heart as you go through this week, as you make decisions and choices. Let God work. And if we have some of these principles as our foundation, then we're going to come out right. Let me just walk down through them again. Number one was recognize God's ownership. Very important. Foundational number one. Recognize God's ownership. They're not ours. These things aren't ours. Number two, we are stewards of whose things? Our things. We think they're our things. And he has given them to us to use to, we are stewards of his things. If we get that right, it'll help us. Number three, learn to be content. Contentment. Such a blessing to be around content people. Number four, we are accountable to God. And number five, God requires us to share our blessings. And then number six, we need to be accountable to our brethren. God bless you this week. Let's just be open to his, to the Spirit. And we're a blessed people. We have so much, and we can do so much into helping further God's kingdom. So God bless you this week. Let's come before the Lord in a kneeling prayer. Let's pray.